Listeners, welcome to the Lost in Postulation podcast, episode 50. I'm Nicola Volpi, and I'm joined by my personal barista, Neil Fitzmagic.
Among many other things, actually, I would argue. Personal barista, French-speaking co-host.
Yeah,
you know, we do it all here on Lost in Postulation. But wow, I must commend your gusto for the start here. This was special.
You know, I appreciate that, and we've got to bring it. It's episode 50.
That's insane.
Do you believe it?
I actually don't. I would never have guessed. Funny enough, and maybe that speaks to my pessimism overall. But like, we started this a year and a bit ago now.
Yeah,
year and 4 months. We didn't do an episode every single week. Life does, in fact, get in the way sometimes. But here we are. Like 50 actual episodes in, 50 hours of content, if not more, in fact.
If not more, certainly more. We had a few bumpers thrown in there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then, I mean, the average podcast, remember we looked at that when we embarked on the journey, around 7 episodes. And we said, let's beat that.
But this is what happens when you do it not for, you know, the eventual thousands of listeners or the eventual sponsorships or whatever, but literally, first and foremost, at least for me, and I think we see this the same way, is we're doing it basically because we enjoy it, right?
The love of the game.
And then if that listener count goes from 0 to 1, then great. And if it goes from 1 to 20 or 30 or 40, then amazing. And it just, that's all a bonus, right? But it's like, for me, from the start, it's been, let's do it for fun. And here we are having fun.
Absolutely. And we've adopted new listener growth tactics. We spoke to the people of Quebec last week. Neil.
Big outreach initiative there, yeah.
Big outreach initiative. Unfortunately, not much growth in Quebec.
Indeed. And in fact, I listened back and not only was my French terrible, but also I think I used the word exigeant, which means difficult, but it's not a very well used word or common word. So basically, it was a complete disaster in every way.
And
but
you used it out of context, I believe.
Totally. I mean, I just said like, c'est très exigeant d'être ici, but like, which it is in a way, but not exactly what I meant. Yeah. Excité probably was the right word, but hey, look, this is the game.
This is the game of improv. Not much growth in Quebec. However, a big upswing in Paris. La Ville Lumière.
Is that true, actually?
Yes, that is true.
Oui, mais bonjour à tous en Paris, quoi.
Bienvenue à tous les auditeurs de Paris, de les banlieues, de la Ville Lumière.
Tous les banlieues, oui, yeah, every single one. If this keeps up, we'll have to switch to a fully French podcast.
We might have to, but they seem to love it. 2 minutes of French was all they needed to gravitate.
Did they stay, though?
It surprise us that it's the French that really care so much about the language and not so much the Canadians?
It is very much true to form, isn't it? Like, there is almost no other country that's so picky about speaking their own language as France, is there?
No.
I think they're pretty number one in the world for that. No offense. I hope I haven't just burned the new French listeners, but...
Well, there you go. It was nice having you here.
Thanks for joining. I mean...
Au revoir.
Au revoir. A bientôt. But here we are, back postulating for number 50. Yeah.
Number 50. We got a special one lined up for you today, listeners. Actually, you lined a special one up for us because you sent in a bunch of postulations to the mailbag, which we'll get into in the second half of this. For more of those, listeners, always reach out to us, lostinpostulation@gmail.com, lostinpostulation on Instagram, and anything else?
If you're one of those few, I think there's about 10 people left there, on the old X, you can catch us there at impostulation. I haven't heard anything from that account coming in anytime recently. I don't know if there has been.
No, but what I have noticed, and you were right about this, is in news articles all over, it's still referred to as X, parentheses, formerly Twitter, or formerly known as, And so I don't think that branding initiative has worked that well for them.
It certainly hasn't, but I'm so glad this happened because I think the world of branding had advanced very far and it was decreasingly likely that any company would make an absolute howler, you know?
Right.
Like usually now, branding of global corporations is so advanced and so like well regulated that pretty much nothing, like any company that you already know, say Coke or whatever, they aren't going to do an absolute howler. Like they're not going to get it so wrong. And that's kind of boring. So at least I'm happy that X has happened because it's just so hilariously bad. Like you couldn't, it's Farfest. It's just up there with the absolute greats, you know. It's the Willy Wonka Glasgow experience, you know.
Right.
In terms of shambolic, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad that those things exist. Not glad for X itself or Twitter. I think that was a horrible idea, but
it gives us a couple minutes every episode.
Every single one.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's part of our brand. Another thing that's part of our brand, Neil, is a mundane postulation to kick things off.
It sure is. And it's almost uncanny that you mentioned France at the start, because mine has a little bit of a French twist to it. Not, we're not going to be speaking any more French, listeners. You'll be glad to hear. But just yesterday, I was in a restaurant that is a little bit special. I would say it's a little bit one of a kind.
Okay.
And I want to talk about it. And particularly use it as a jumping off point for a mundane postulation. I was in a restaurant in Fredericksburg that opened, I think, only in the last few months. It replaced the Wagamama that was there previously.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that Wagamama closed, the Asian restaurant.
It did indeed. And it was replaced by a French bistro called Restaurant Bouillon.
Oh, Bouillon, which is the little broth,
indeed,
correct?
Indeed. Yeah. But Restaurant Bouillon, I swear to God, it's one of a kind in Copenhagen, because it is unbelievably cheap. Okay. Like, mind-boggling. For Copenhagen, you're looking at the menu, genuinely, I spat all my water out. Had to get another glass of water and spat it all out again. I was just like, it is unbelievably cheap. It's not even compared, like, I don't even have a, McDonald's is more expensive. Like, it is insane, right?
Okay.
And naturally, because it's so cheap, it's rammed with people.
Right.
It is at wall to wall. And literally, the tables are so close together that you have a person to your immediate left and right who you're hearing every word of their conversation.
Right.
You know, so it's like, so, and it's a production line, you know, it's right. It's not quite a canteen, like, it's still full table service, but the longer you sit there, the more you start to realize the corners that they cut to get the prices so low. It's insane. Okay. Right. So anyway, I actually liked it a lot. Right. So we got two starters, two main courses, a dessert and soft drinks, 300 kroner all in. Right.
Wow.
Which is just like
krona, we're talking 50 around euro, 50 bucks, 50 euro, right?
Which, yeah. I know for some people in different parts of the world, you're like, okay, is that not normal? In Copenhagen, that's unheard of.
That's
like
half price.
You'd be talking 500 best as like a great, you'd come away feeling, oh, that was pretty good. And 1,000 is more like a fancy-ish place these days.
Right.
So like 150 euro or something like that. That's kind of the going rate. So this is just mind-boggling. But then on the way home, and as I was thinking after, I was like, I kind of would pay more, actually. Like,
okay,
for some of the thing. Like,
so it was good. You haven't said yet.
Oh, the food was fine. Okay. Yeah. Like, I got a steak for 20 euro, which had steak and chips. Like, you know, like, right. Which is, I mean, again, good going. Was it the best steak I've ever had? No. Was it the worst? No, also.
Okay.
The starter was like self-peel raya. What, shrimp?
Yeah, you know? Shrimp.
Which were fine also. Like, okay. It came with a big dollop of aioli mayo. I was like, okay.
Lovely.
So, and we had a creme brulee for dessert. It was creme brulee. Yeah, it was fine.
Okay.
So, it's not bad. Like, the food is very, very acceptable. But what I felt like was, if I could have a bit more space to the tables either side of me, if I could have maybe a slightly nicer lemonade than the one that they served, if I could have maybe a better steak, you know, all those things. I just started to feel basically that, yes, I saved money, but at what cost, you know?
Right. It's priced that way for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. And I was kind of thinking, would I actually prioritize? Would I go back here because it's so cheap? Yes, it is. But actually, if I'm going to go to a restaurant, I will actually just dial it up like one notch more, you know?
Okay.
Because gotcha. I want to be comfortable the whole way along. So then I guess to try and turn this into a postulation then, like a mundane of some kind. When you think of a restaurant, right, and the decision to go to a restaurant.
Right.
Do you have, like, if there's some kind of a diagram where price is one axis and then like experience or service is another and food is another, like, where do you think you fall? Is it equal? Is it like an equilateral triangle, or do you weigh more towards one experience or the other?
In terms of price, I mean, my decision-making process, ours, is usually, it is, for starters, some sort of treat. You're thinking like a date night, right?
Yeah.
You're going out for dinner, and because I like to cook a lot at home and I have no problem with it. I don't see it as a chore, right? So it has to be a treat. It has to be going to have something that I wouldn't otherwise replicate at home.
Yeah.
So for example, I don't go out to have pasta for dinner, right?
Yeah.
Or pizza, because quite frankly, like, something I can do at home and paying, you know, triple.
Yeah.
But then, since it has these things where it's something I cannot replicate at home, it is an occasion. I'm willing to pay more than for my bundle of groceries or whatever.
Okay. So I hear there's a novelty aspect, or there's like a skill aspect even, that you're using the restaurant to unlock something that you otherwise couldn't create at home. Is that right?
It's also like a skill aspect. I like that. It's like a performance. It's, for me, that's what we're doing that night, as opposed, and the alternative could have been going to the theater, or going to the cinema, or going to the stadium to watch a match. It is, part of it is the entertainment of it. It's not just, oh, I'm lazy tonight, I don't want to cook, let's go out to dinner.
Okay.
Especially nowadays, when you can order in so easily.
True. Although that's maybe a sidetrack, which is the price of ordering in these days.
Oh, it's nuts.
I mean, it is restaurant prices now, right? You know, for fast food, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
So I'm wondering then...
Fast-ish.
To me, yeah, like medium fast, you know? Yeah. It's come to a point now where our decision-making is, should we order or should we just go to the restaurant anyway? Because it's going to cost basically the same. And at least if you go to the restaurant, you know, you get to, you know, have all your food brought to you and you know, not have to worry about plates and stuff like that. You know, I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out myself. I think if you'd asked me before yesterday, I would have said, oh yeah, it's all about price to value. You know, like that, that's the thing. Whereas I came away yesterday feeling like there is a limit, you know, like there's a thriftiness that I actually don't necessarily need. You know what I mean?
Right. It's, but there is also oftentimes... You do get what you pay for. It's the same also with going on vacation and holiday. One of the lines of work I do, right? The worst clients I have, do you know which ones they are?
The thriftiest?
The ones that want the biggest bargain at all costs, but come expecting a VIP service. They end up in...
Disappointment.
I don't work with them.
No.
I say no at the door because what happens is they end up getting what they paid for in a not-so-good hotel.
Yeah.
3 stars, expecting 5-star service and everything.
Exactly.
And then they give you so many headaches, but you make significantly less money with them than the one who spends a lot on the holiday. And it's a bit the same with restaurant crowds.
It is, within reason though, because I do think that hospitality, and I would throw restaurants in with hotels on this, is probably the most likely thing to overcharge, right?
Like, 100%. Because the cost of the...
Yeah.
The employees you have, and it's service-based, right?
100%. But also, like, things like hype, branding, like, prestige, appearances, all these things are things that they use to dial up the price, right?
Yeah.
And, like, if a hotel has an amazing lobby that's very Instagrammable, my red flag really starts to go because I'm like, hold on. Are they charging 3x the price here because they know people are just paying for that? Like, the, you know that hotel, San, or what's it called? There's one in town that has this unbelievable pool, this like tropical pool environment.
Yeah.
You know the one?
Villa Copenhagen.
Guldsmillen or something.
Guldsmillen, yeah.
But that thing is Instagrammable as F, you know?
Yeah.
But what I've heard is the rooms are absolutely bang average, but they charge like top dollar for
it. And it's a balance thing. I think at the end of the day, it's a balance thing, right? You will have correlation.
Yeah,
between price and quality.
Yeah,
but then within that circle of correlation,
exactly,
you need to use your nose to figure out okay, what separates the wheat from the chaff? Who are the pretenders in this circle of correlation and not?
Yeah,
and the only reason to do that is probably to go out and get the lived experience and some trial and error, right? Like
brings us back to Google reviews. Sometimes that's the only way. You know?
Sometimes that's the only way, and that's why we love. Our Google reviews.
Last
our
episode.
Stars,
if anyone, if anyone didn't hear last week's episode, go back. It's a good one.
Well, there you go. Well, that's our postulation. I mean, I miss going out to dinner at restaurants. So now we have almost a 5-month-old. So dinner out, we've had a lot of lunches out.
Yeah.
And we bring them along, whatever. But the fussy time is before bedtime, right? Yeah. So it's very difficult to get out to the restaurant. So looking forward actually to doing that again and providing you with a with an updated answer.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't my intention to dangle restaurants in front of you here.
Well, you did.
Yeah, I
did. Restaurant broth.
Yes, I was. To use its anglicized name. It is good.
Their biggest advantage, this is how you pitched it to me. Their biggest advantage was that they were cheap as F.
Yes, I didn't swear.
Yeah,
for the baby.
And then you said, well, the steak was all right. The lemonade could have been better.
Yeah.
I spit my water out. So to me, it doesn't land as, oh, let me go there. Because that's how I view restaurants isn't where am I going to get the best deal anymore. Because I know the best deal I'm going to get at cooking out.
But I think you're the minority here. Because
probably.
I think if I know Danish people, like I know Danish people, they love...
I know a couple of them.
They love a good deal. Like
they
if you...
give free stuff out in the city of Copenhagen.
Queues down the road.
Queues.
Yeah.
I mean, processions.
Hours.
It's and like even, to see the Pope.
And even that's not even... So that's free stuff. That's understandable. But even if a place
to
is having...
To an extent. It's understandable. Like,
to an extent.
extent. Students, but like 45-year-olds queuing for like a free popsicle.
I mean, den er dejligt. Det er helt gratis.
Det er så dejligt. Solen skinner i dag, man.
Det er helt perfekt.
For helvede.
Det er ikke noget andet, jeg vil gøre i dag. Det er bare det.
But like, that's one thing. There are clothes shops that have, you know, lagersal or like slutspur, these kind of things.
Yeah.
So these are places that are having sales, but are still basically making money. And again, queues down the road, out the door, one at a time, guys, queuing for an hour to get in. Even their freaking tax returns that they got this weekend, there was a queue of 3 hours to see your tax return.
And Maria was asking me, hey, did you check if you're getting money back from the... I said, no, because I'm not going to wait for 3 hours when I can just wait until Monday, really.
Minimum 3 hours.
When anyways, it's going to ruin my weekend when I do check.
Exactly. So. Yeah, it's probably better not to. Anyway, we went off course there. But basically, my point was to say, I think this place is going to be rammed for the next foreseeable future, full of people every day going through that production line, like 1 hour in and out, or an hour and a half max maybe.
Okay.
They're very efficient. They know what they're doing. And I think that's a trend that's probably here to stay. I don't think this is the last we've heard of Restaurant Bouillon.
We need to see if they make money though. Minor detail, right?
I think
because
they
the
must
cost
be.
Of running such an establishment, if you're providing decent food, is tricky here.
This is going to be interesting. Yeah, let's
you gotta
see.
Go super volume. You got to turn 3-4 tables a night, probably.
But I think they do because we were in by 5 and out by 6:30. You know, so like
wow,
it's
an early.
Yeah,
dinner.
We were. Wow. We had a late brunch or late lunch, so then early dinner. Wow. But all that said, I think it's time to actually get into the mailbag. We can't spend too much more time.
You've put this off long enough.
Exactly. I've been dreading it. I don't want. I know the listeners come for me quite often, so expecting the worst here.
Expecting the worst right after the break, listeners. Listeners, welcome back. Neil, it's finally time for that episode 50 mailbag.
The mailbag is heaving with letters.
It is heaving. We had to just pick a few listeners, but we're going to keep it going. We're going to keep, you know, recycling also those ones that came in, which we don't use today.
Mm.
Neil, no better place to start. An old friend of the podcast with an unknown identity has reached back out for the third time.
Oh, amazing. Okay.
Yes. Friend, which made a song for you once.
Yeah.
It's magic. Who then came then back to you saying your vibes were low.
Yeah.
And it was disappointing.
Great feedback. Yes.
This time, like his fellow countryman, Roy Keane, Fitzmagic's shtick as the grumpy old man of podcasting somehow never gets old. It reads like a review.
Yeah.
Having said that, he seems to be channeling his energy to bow to the demands of the elite. He no longer champions the reviewers, but is lately showing a dangerous tendency to side with the reviewed.
That is probably true. I picked up on that myself. Whoever this is, like, they're generally spot on with their observations. And I think it's true. However, should I respond already or is there more?
Please go. No.
Just only to say that the reason that I do so often side with the reviewed over the reviewer is that, as I said on the last episode, it was the last episode, the amount of one-star reviews that aren't logically coherent is too damn high, you know?
Right.
So, unfortunately, as much as I have sympathy for someone who goes to the Grand Canyon and it's foggy, for every, you know, one of those, there's 500 who are like, there's no convenience store here, God damn it. Where do I get my groceries at? And that I just have no time for. You know, like, as I said, I was thinking about this after the episode and I still believe it. There should be a class in school which is like critiquing 101, like how to actually criticize things and what is a one star versus what is a five star. You know, like, please, like, how do we come to a balanced view of something? Because someone leaving a one star and saying, like, the waitress looked at me funny once, you know, it's like that serves nobody. Like, nobody's going to benefit from this, you know? So that is probably why when we take these one star reviews, it probably feels like I'm very sympathetic towards car parks and theme parks and
towards the owners of these establishments.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe I'm just a capitalist at heart. But I do think I would have sympathy if I felt the arguments were actually legit, but so many of them aren't.
Okay. Okay, I think that's fair. Listener, unknown, anonymous listener, you are our vigilante when it comes to Mr. Fitzpatrick here. So so please keep the postulation.
Keeps
coming.
Me honest. He's generous with praise, but also generous with feedback when I need it. You know, so it's great. It's a great relationship. I wish it was two-way, but you know, I don't know who it is. So there you go.
Well, there you go. A quick sidebar.
Oh yeah.
Out of the mailbag, real quick.
Okay.
I just remember this. I was walking past an establishment you know very well.
Hmm.
the headquarters of Scientology.
Oh yeah, I love it.
The other day.
Fantastic.
And, did you know they offer free personality tests?
They do. That's where
that
they get you.
That's where that they get you.
Yeah, yeah. So 100%. I haven't done one myself, but all I know is like their whole opening patter is like, oh, we're just wanting to help you be a better person. Like we've no interest. Oh, don't worry about the religion. Like that's nothing. Just come on in. Like people do us for coaching and stuff. Like very chill, very casual. Wow. So that they put up a very innocent face, and it's like MBTI style profiling, right. And like here are your strengths and weaknesses. But then they may at the end of that personality task. Test be like, ooh, I can see your body Titans are a little bit high actually. Ooh, and you're like, body Titans, what's that? And then they're like, oh no, never mind. But then that's they trigger a little bit of your curiosity.
Do you know what I'm thinking?
No.
For the listeners, for the podcast, should we try it?
This is I had this thought, right? I even thought we should do a mini docu series on Scientology.
Yeah.
But what I've seen is the terrifying consequences of messing with Scientology.
Really?
Genuinely. That the likes of, okay, Louis Theroux is the obvious one, but Leah Rimini or like any former celebrities who have left have basically had their lives ruined by the organization one way or another. They have the deep pockets to hire a private investigator to bother you and follow you around and whatever.
To find dirt on us.
Yeah, exactly. And or ruin you one way or another. Like contact your employer or whatever, all this kind of stuff. So that has been the thing that kind of holds me back, which is like, okay, probably it would be totally fine and hilarious and great.
With a pseudonym maybe,
but they're also smart. Like they probably have enough pranksters like us that they've learned a thing or two about how to deal with us. So I'm basically, as you can hear, open to it, right? I want to do a Scientology personality test. Right. It's just, do I want to risk them finding the podcast or whatever and then being like, right, take these guys down, you know?
Right.
Scary stuff.
Listeners, if any of you have had interactions with,
that'd be good.
Do we call it the Church of Scientology? What is that?
I think they call themselves the Church of Scientology, but just call it Scientology. Don't give
with
it any more.
Scientology. Yeah. Let us know in the next mailbag. But while we're at it, in this mailbag, Neil, just tying up a few loose ends from the last episode, we discussed brunch, we discussed the philosophies behind it. We threw out a poll to our listeners asking, "Is brunch a function of the time of day or the type of food?" Resounding victory of 70% to 30% for time of day.
Yeah, I see the logic there. I don't agree, but it's just that the name is, it implies timings. It's like breakfast, lunch, it's in between, right?
They're true to that.
I wonder though, would any listeners be moved by my argument that it varies so much from country to country when brunch is that it almost makes no sense to talk about time?
Because, but it would still be in between, relatively speaking, in between their breakfast time
that's
and
for
their
sure.
lunchtime.
Its relative positioning is for sure. It's between breakfast and lunch in each place, right? But if you ask a Dane who gets up at 6 a.m., you know, when's brunch? They'll be like, 9 maybe if I sleep in late, you know? and then if you ask an Irish person, they'll be like, 1 or 2 o'clock, man, no problem. You know, like, it's that wide a scale we're talking. So that's why I don't like to tie it down to, oh, if it's at 11, then it's brunch. If it's at 9, it's breakfast. Because, like, what are we doing here?
You know? All right.
That's my short answer.
But we have to go with what the listeners
said. That's overwhelming. Yeah. That's 70%, yeah.
And when we ask them, Grand Canyon or Statue of Liberty, following that, resounding victory, 86% to 14% for the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, the GC. I think it's always going to take it. The GC, as I said as well in the episode, it's just insanely positive. It's one of the few places where everyone who's been there, at least apart from the odd Google reviewer, but like in person, everyone I've talked to who's been there, it's like, no, seriously, you gotta go.
There's few places like that where I think are even better than the pictures. I had that at Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
And maybe at Victoria Falls. Off the top of my head, I can't think of many other places.
There's only a few, and none of them are man-made, obviously. So it's just
right,
like,
that's the thing. Nature.
The only ones that stick out to me is the Samaria Gorge in Crete. The first few moments of that, it's stunning.
Yeah.
And the first time I went skiing as well, where you're just, you know, you're looking out over the top.
Right.
And you're just like, this is insane.
This is what it's about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I can fully understand the GC coming out on top versus the SOL.
Okay. Next on the mailbag, we had a chaos agent, friend of the podcast, the Graham Cracker, the Gray Ham. He's a man of many names, sending us in a little voice note.
Sure did, yeah. He was reacting. So let's bring it up and hear what he had to say.
Yeah.
Here's one for your little podcast, right? How come? And I don't know if this is just an Irish thing or if this is a globally felt pain, but right, here's my dilemma. My dilemma is got a packet of hot dog buns recently, packet of six. And that's the only packet available in the shop, but it is pretty much a normal amount of hot dog buns. Also, the only hot dogs available in the shop were a pack of 10, right? Again, only packet, but generally a standard number, right? So I'm not saying that that's anything irregular. In fact, it's entirely regular. My problem is 10 does not equal six. And if you look, and then you go, but what if you want more? Yeah, if you want more, maybe put 12 hot dogs in the pack so that you can double dog every hot dog bun, right? But in this case, you cannot. I'm left now with the conundrum of having to buy more hot dogs to fit in the buns so I can double them up and maybe so I've got 14 left to fit in three buns. Now I am an animal, I'm a monster, but that's too much for me. There is some equation where eventually you'll probably hit parity, but I think you'd have to buy six. Yeah, you'd have to buy six packets of hot dogs, and the maths is failing me now. And 10 packets of hot dog buns to get equal. Now I'm not in the business of doing that and kicking that can down the road. Is there a gap in the market for a company that entirely bases its reason to exist around selling equal numbers of hot dog buns to hot dogs? That's all I want to know.
Well, there you have it. I think his call at the end for a clearinghouse, essentially, for the hot dog bun market is definitely an idea. I kind of wish we had Eric Mittenhall, the hot dog top dog,
Yeah,
here.
we know no better man to give an answer than Eric, and he would have given a good one, I'm sure. And it was actually that episode he Graham was responding to. He said he loved the interview. It's actually a good provocation, though. When I did Economics 101 when I was in, 15 or 16 years old in school, we learned about complementary goods, and how those can impact each other. This is a good example. Hot dog buns and hot dogs. You kind of never have one without the other,
Correct.
So why is it that they haven't synced up a little bit better than this? There shouldn't be a world where you can buy 10 buns and not buy 10 hot dogs, It is it is kind of mystifying. I know they're completely separate companies, and I wonder, is there some legal EU thing? I wouldn't be surprised if the EU was like, don't talk to each other. It's non-competitive.
Right.
Like, because they do that about
And
everything
they
else.
also apparently don't go into the supermarkets to check.
Yeah. Because this is a real, like, now I do wonder how much is lost sales here, really. Like, if you went ahead and solved this problem, you said, like, let's just fix it one way. So we go to the butchers and we say, whoever's doing hot dogs, we go, let's do 10 rather than six, right?
Right.
Because look at the buns. What kind of uplift are we going to see there, really,
Right.
Maybe 10%, 15,
You'll be able to price up because you're increasing the amount of
Yeah.
hot dogs in a package.
And then, not to put on my tinfoil hat too much, isn't it actually better for them not to match up? Because then you either have to, oh, you have to overbuy on one or the other, So if there's 10 buns and there's usually six dogs, you're going to buy 12,
The
at
hot dog
least.
market wins
Yeah.
ultimately by having this mismatch.
Exactly, because they force you to buy 12, and then you have two left over, and you're like, okay, I'll have it as a little side hot
No.
dog, That, I think that's the only explanation, because if whenever there's an economic incentive for something like this, like harmony, usually it is fulfilled, like it is
Right.
met sooner or later. So I think my little tinfoil hat conspiracy is the one here. That's the explanation.
I think it might be. My initial thought was that the Graham happened to come upon a ravaged supermarket on a Sunday night when they hadn't restocked their supplies, and that led to it. I went to the supermarket myself to check this out. And what did I find? The bun confections came either in 14
Oof.
or 6.
Okay.
The hot dogs were all in 4s.
Four is so low for hot dogs.
So you're going, I mean, if you want to match with the 6, you got to go kind of with a 24, right, to
Whoa.
get there. And
Jesus.
the 14, I mean,
You never get there.
you'll
Or.
never get there if you only have hot dogs coming in 4s, right? Because you'll get to 12, you'll get
Yeah.
to 16, but then what? You're going to need 28 buns, and what are you going to do with 28 buns?
Exactly. You'll never fill them. I
No.
think that, and again, it's interesting again, the same exact thing of the it's the meat that comes in lower, The
Right.
buns are up in the tens,
Right.
What is the explanation for this? There was one thing I thought of. You were saying, hey, maybe he got there on a depleted day,
Right.
But I know that part of the strategy now for grocers retailers is to minimize their assortment to the max.
Oh, big time.
So they're like, what is the one of everything that I need so that consumers will shut up and leave me alone, you know, right. Like so that they don't actually stop shopping with us. So it's in their interest to just say, okay, that's four dogs. That's the one. All the others are out. And what about the buns? Yeah, that's 10. Okay, grand. And probably they have the numbers to support this, that they make more money doing that, being annoying, basically. What's the word for it? Like, asshole design or something. Like, you know, it is actually more profitable for them to be difficult, you know? Sadly? It's terrible.
And at what cost?
I mean, I'm not having hot dogs. Do you buy hot dogs generally?
No, I don't buy hot dogs. That's why I had to, like, go to the store to, you know, picture the whole flow myself. Yeah, my wife gets chicken sausages. She likes those because she doesn't really like eat pork, but she can seems do a nice chicken sausage.
Yeah,
but then she has it on her rye bread, right? She's not like making herself a hot dog for lunch.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
she's like,
that would be weird.
She's like frying an egg, having the chicken sausage on a piece of rye bread.
Well, she's the type of person I want to talk to because I'm thinking there must be people buying frankfurters or like hot dog meats, not putting them in the buns, you know?
I would do that. You know, I'm not a sandwich or hot dog guy.
For sure. Yeah.
A summer grill. I would take the big frankfurter. Throw it onto a paper plate.
And just dip it.
Fork and knife and dip it in the.
That's the way
I
do it.
I wouldn't mind that. I think the bun is an unnecessary filler. I mean, Mittenhall will come for me.
No, but didn't he say the bun is irrelevant?
Is irrelevant to the definition of what makes a hot dog a hot dog.
Yes,
correct.
Exactly.
Correct.
So he would probably say, hey, the hot dog is existing before the bun even comes along.
Right,
you know?
That's true.
So a hot dog is a hot dog. Yeah. And the meat thing, you know?
Right.
I guess.
So we don't even need those 14 buns.
No. Did you ever, as maybe it was just my childhood, but... The slightly ghetto approximation of a hot dog bun, which is just a normal slice of bread, like just folded around.
Oh, God,
We had that a little bit, but with burgers and hot dogs. That's that takes me back. That is a solution. I mean, if you're stuck, just a normal white sliced pan. There's your hot dog bun.
So just buy like a baguette from the bakery.
Oh, a baguette is a great call, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an even better call.
And just chop that up.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to, with a baguette, when you're on the go, because you got to really tear into it. You know?
No.
You're going to make a mess.
Oh, no. I wouldn't want... If I was buying one out in town, I wouldn't want the baguette thing, you know?
No. You want your Franska dog.
Yeah, all the way. A one-handed hot dog. Yeah. All the way. 100%. Yeah. But I mean, from a home point of view, if you're having this mismatch issue of saying 10 buns to 6 dogs, you know, and you don't want to buy 10 packs of dogs to have the perfect lineup, you know, then I think a baguette is the way to go to close the gap, you know?
Yeah.
That's my thought.
That could be it.
But it's a great question.
It is a great question, a great postulation. And I say, you know, we shoot this over to the hot dog top dog and see what he has to say.
If he's willing to chip in again, just even by mail, is this something he sees? Like, is there a problem with the bakery or the baked goods industry that they're not linking up necessarily with the multi-pack quantities?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the case everywhere.
Must be.
Yeah.
I'm thinking now, by extension, would we have the same issue? And I should have checked this with... Burgers. Burger patties and the burger buns.
I'll check it next time. I'm actually, I think it's my turn to do the shop today, so I will. I'll check it out, and next episode I'll close the loop.
Field
on that.
Research.
While we're on it, is there any other complimentary goods like that we want to check out? No, I think we're good. I was thinking along the Mexican tortilla kind of lines,
you
get 6 tortillas,
fillers.
And then. Do you get enough beef in 500 grams? But I guess you do.
Right, that shredded beef.
Yeah. No, I think we're good. Let's not boil the ocean here, to use a corporate jargon.
Right.
I think we're good.
But I do understand, there is something about the protein in a way being underproduced or something. I also see it with the food box we get delivered every week.
Yeah.
The portions of the protein, like of the chicken... I mean, you're talking like 100 grams of chicken per person.
And it's
like,
mostly water.
Not enough for me.
Have you noticed it's mostly water now?
It's mostly water.
If you buy a chicken breast now in Fertex and it's like 500 grams, great, it is 500 grams.
But
you throw it in the pan and then this like layer of an ocean of water comes out of it and that boils off and then you're left, if you measure it again after, you're left with 300 grams. It's sick.
Do you reweigh your chicken?
Yes, because I was
you don't.
I did actually. Because I was like, this is uncanny. Look at the amount of water coming out.
Yeah.
And it was a great... It's only with the really cheap chicken that you get this, where it's like, whoa, what a great deal. 500 grams for whatever, you know?
Again.
And then you get what you pay for.
Right,
yeah, exactly. Ridiculous. Well, but hey, there you go.
There you go. We'll take a quick break, listeners, and come back with a final, very special listener postulation. Listeners, welcome back to the final portion of our 50th episode. Some of you may be tuning into this through our trailer or our little clip for this because the postulation we got from listener and guests of the podcast, D.H. Porter.
Nice.
He loved that Mount Rushmore concept so much that he asked, what's the Mount Rushmore of the best episodes of Lost in Postulation?
Great question, and not one I would ever have thought to ask, so it's great that he chipped in.
And timely, to be honest. This is our 50th episode.
It's perfect.
Here we are.
It couldn't be better.
So, Neil, we have a lot of them to go through.
Yeah.
We went through them a bit during the break here, and let's postulate through this.
Mm.
What's the one of the first ones that comes to mind?
So when I look at, say, our opening 20 or so,
yeah,
the ones that I look back on with great fondness,
mm,
probably the first one that jumps out actually is number six, Christoph Waltz and the Foreign Villain Triumvirate.
Yes.
I just feel that's the right blend of acerbic kind of critique mixed with, you know, some actual interesting observations about how foreign villains are portrayed unfairly in Hollywood.
Right.
You know, like, I think it hits the right balance, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're into movies, I think that's a good one to start with, because I think we over-indexed on movies in the start.
Yes.
Versus today. But this is one where if you are a movie nerd, this one like ticks a lot of boxes, I think.
Definitely. And when you're on that theme of movie nerds,
yeah,
one I really liked was, for those early ones,
mm,
episode 8, Settling,
yeah,
the Score.
Yes.
Where we talked about music in film.
I think that one was probably our most academically useful or like informationally useful episode. Because,
yes,
I remember the research was huge into that. We properly like dug deep. But I think it ended up being a solid hour of like bang, 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 facts all the way through. You know?
Absolutely.
Which was quite cool.
And again, if I remember correctly, that one ended with a carryover of one of our mundane postulations about saunas.
Oh, yeah. And we had some listener postulation on that one. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think that one captures a lot for the new listener. It's like, okay, here's a good place to start to get an idea of what we're about. You know?
Exactly. That fusion of, would you call it the intersection of the mundanity of daily life and pop culture?
I guess I would, Nicola. I guess I would. Do you know what else jumps out to me? And now, I don't want to take too many from the opening era, but we've had this one on lock for a while, The Happily Everest After, you know?
Yeah.
That one was the first real postulatory segment where like it was really, really heavy postulation. It was like, would you this, that, or the other? You know, who would you take on a trip to Mount Everest?
Episode 11.
Yeah, episode 11. That's the one. Yeah. We're going to have to narrow this down to four, but these ones are all, I would say, in my humble opinion.
It's nice to relive a few of these.
True. There's so many, yeah.
There is a whole category, which at some point we're going to have to go back to, the pop culture country tier list.
That's true, yeah.
Where we would take countries and on a set criterion rank their pop culture exploits.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite one of those is 28, Land Down Under, where we throw in, we over-index on the Australian accents.
100%. That's probably the first time where you start to really deep dive on accents.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think that was a good one. I think any of those pop culture country tier lists are great if you have a special interest in that country.
Yeah.
It's like if you've always wanted to learn more about Sweden or Mexico or Japan, it's like a great intro. So I think those are also actually a nice starting point if specifically culture or pop culture is your thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I also kind of like, maybe I'm not going to pitch this as one of our top, but episode 18, Crouching Moron, Hidden Badass. This was like a nice exploratory dive into the world of like film tropes or TV tropes, or,
exactly,
you know, like, which I think is it's nice if you're into it.
Absolutely. And then at one point we really got started and went deep on one-star Google reviews.
Yes.
And I think still the best one was one of the first ones that got the ball rolling was 22, To Dry Clean or Not To Dry Clean.
$1 dry clean. Or was it $2? I can't remember these days.
It was the $1.99 dry cleaner
in
Charleston,
South Carolina.
South Carolina.
Yeah.
Which then became the $2.99 dry cleaner, but crucially did not change the sign on top of the store.
Yeah, amazing. Perfect for the fake news era. Like, why bother telling an accurate price? You know, like, who cares these days?
Exactly.
That is a good intro to that particular type of segment we do. And then we've had a few more, which all kind of fall into certain formats that we've done, so we kind of relaunched them. But then I think one that we only got into fairly recently is the kind of agony aunt, what would you do kind of one. So right. Like Ice Pack Diplomacy is an interesting episode in the sense that it's about problem solving something in your life specifically, you know.
Correct.
So I like that I like that approach to it, let's say. It's a new angle that we took.
Exactly. And then we did have one. Now I'm trying to think what the title of, yes, 32, Knocking on Tokyo's Door.
Mm, similar.
Where yeah. The postulation vibes were high, where we even have videos of this, of you making me eat a door,
yes.
You making me knock on every door in Tokyo, and I believe you making me, what was it, cycle from Copenhagen to Baku? Walk
that was it.
From Copenhagen to Baku.
Yeah, any way you could. I like that one as well, just for the sheer, like, out of the box, like, what the hell? You know, you never kind of know what's coming next. So yeah. I think if you're into hypothetical scenarios, that's by far the best one.
Yeah. It's been a trip down memory lane. Anything else before we narrow this down to our Rushmore? Any shout outs?
I have one more special place in my heart for 42, What Makes a Cult.
I knew you were going the darkest episode.
Easily the darkest. Where, for the listener who hasn't checked that one out, we actually go ahead and make our own cult, complete with all of the trappings of what a successful cult needs. It's a really strange approach to the topic, but I think one that serves it well, ultimately leads us to some interesting postulations.
Very interesting indeed. All right, Neil. We got to narrow this down.
Yeah.
What's a must up there on that wall for you?
Okay. I think settling the score, we can probably lock in, right?
I think number we eight. Have to. Settling the score, number
yeah.
eight.
Yeah. That was a good one. Like.
Yeah.
And it's a classic. It'll, even in years to come, we'll look back on episode 8 with fondness.
Evergreen
content. And there's one more thing. That was when the audio quality stepped up as well, I think.
That was a watershed moment, yes. Because we upgraded our setup, essentially.
Exactly.
Our microphones.
Exactly. Then I think let's lock in A Land Down Under.
Okay.
The Australia. Because we need one. We need one pop culture deep dive.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's our strongest. I also like the Sweden one, but I think... yeah, I'm happy
Sweden
to take.
Sweden is good, but yeah. We rated them so low on food that they weren't very happy.
No, exactly. A lot of controversy. Yeah, I think we need one-star Google review, and probably it is going to be actually the dry cleaning.
It's got to be 22. To dry clean or not to dry clean, if you want to discover the worst dry cleaner in the world, as well as locked into that is a restaurateur in Brussels firing back at bad reviews.
Oh, yeah.
That was on that episode.
Classic. Yeah. And then I think... we have space for one more, and what I would humbly suggest here is one of those like who's your team, who's your squad ones, you know.
Yeah.
And the one that jumps out to me, actually, we didn't mention it already, was the casino heist, Ultimate Celebrity Casino Heist.
The Ultimate Celebrity Casino Heist. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, that was episode 30, because that had the right mix of like film tropes and like, you know, things we've seen from Ocean's 11, etc., mixed with real celebrity discussions, you know. I thought that was cool. So that, to me, this is a decent mix. We're missing a few more of the more recent episodes, unfortunately.
But we can bring those back around at episode 100. I think
yeah.
For now, listeners, if you want to get started with Lost in Postulation into our back catalog, you don't have to listen to everything in order. We recommend that. But you can start with our Mount Rushmore here with episode 8, Settling the Score.
Nice.
Episode 28, A Land Down Under.
Mm-hmm.
Episode 22, To Dry Clean or Not to Dry Clean. And finally, last but not least, episode 30, The Ultimate Celebrity Casino Heist.
They're the ones. Check them out. Let us know what you think. We're always happy to hear from you.
Well, listeners, there you go. 50 episodes. It's been a wild ride. Neil, how do you feel?
Unbelievable. Ready for 50 more? Just smashing it. Let's keep going.
At least. Listeners, thank you. You'll hear from us shortly. And enjoy.